Good morning. It's Wednesday, October 22nd. This is the Green Valley News. Mark DeGruft with you here on Sun Sounds. Well, scammers aren't just going after your money now. They're going after your property, too. For the past couple of years, Pima County Sheriff's Department Detective Tyler Rivas has seen an uptick in bad guys targeting the unencumbered properties, no mortgage or lien, of deceased people. I don't know where the criminals, the scammers, are getting their information that the person has passed away, whether it's obituaries or something else, but they target homes that are paid off and the person, the property owner, has passed away, and then they fraudulently put a warranty deed in through the recorder's office. Once that's done, it'll go through the assessors and then the property is theirs. They can do with it whatever they want, Rivas said. Law enforcement only finds out about it after the next of kin tries to sell the house, he said. They're trying to sell the house and then they realize it's not their grandmother's or their mother's house anymore, and they don't know what happened. She's no longer around and they don't know what to do. Then we look at it, Rivas said. The scammers literally walk into the recorder's office with documents that have been notarized by either a notary who is unaware that it's a scam or by someone who has ordered a notary stamp on Amazon using a real notary's name and commission number, Rivas said. At the moment, Rivas is investigating 4 title fraud cases. In an effort to stop the scammers, the Pima County Recorder's Office has set up a free fraud alert system. Fraud Notify will send out an alert via email when a document is recorded with your name on it. The hope is that the alert will come before the deed makes its way to the assessor's office, Rivas said. Once it gets recorded, the recorder's office then tells the assessor's office that there's been a change in the recording on this property and a change in ownership, per se, to somebody else. Once it gets to the assessor's office, that's when the change of ownership happens. Rivas said that for a while, bad guys were basically running the same scam with houses that were up for sale, but once the word got out, real estate agents became more diligent about requiring the owners of the home to show up for a walkthrough with property identification before listing the property. The common denominator is they're paid off, so there's no mortgage, no liens. Everything is outright paid off and owned, he said. One of the preventions that we tell people, whether I talk to people about this type of stuff, is maybe you have a mortgage on your property or your house, even if it's a small one, because that'll be the one loophole that the person has to jump through before they can steal your property. People in Green Valley may be unwilling to do that, but they could set up a trust account and place a lien on the house through that trust, Rivas said. And once caught, the scammers could face forgery and theft charges, Rivas said. If they've done it more than once, they could also be charged with fraudulent schemes and artifices. Rivas said that there are discussions among legislators about ways to prevent these scams. One suggestion is to require county recorders to hire investigators who would look into all property and house deed transactions. From Phoenix, Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays and Representative-elect Adelita Grijalva filed a federal lawsuit against the United States House of Representatives, alleging Speaker Mike Johnson has unlawfully blocked Grijalva from taking her congressional oath following her election last month. The lawsuit, filed in U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C., seeks to force the House to seat Grijalva as the representative for Arizona's 7th Congressional District. According to the complaint, Johnson has refused to allow Grijalva's swearing-in for 4 weeks since her election victory. May says that Johnson is actively stripping the people of Arizona of one of their seats in Congress and subjecting the district to taxation without representation. The Attorney General argues that the Speaker's actions disenfranchise more than 800,000 constituents in the Southern Arizona District. Speaker Johnson's obstruction has gone far beyond petty partisan politics. It's an unlawful breach of our Constitution, Grijalva said. The case represents an unusual constitutional dispute over congressional seating procedures. Federal courts rarely intervene in House internal matters, although the Constitution requires each chamber to seat duly elected members. and the lawsuit seeks immediate judicial intervention to compel Grijalva's swearing in and restore full representation to Arizona's 7th District, which, in Cochise County, includes Bisbee, Douglas, and Palominas. The Dollar General store in El Mato has closed for renovation, aimed at providing expanded products and services to its growing customer base. Store manager David Mongoose Gaxiola said that the remodel is a reward. After more than 5 years in operation, the El Mato store far exceeded initial projections with an average of 375 transactions per day. Beginning last week, contractors came in and removed the reach-in freezer and refrigeration units that had lined the north and east walls inside the store. They will be replaced with larger and more accessible units. We're increasing the refrigeration and freezer capacity by more than 200% to accommodate new product lines, Gaxiola said. The 9,100-square-foot small-scale box store opened in April of 2019. The crews on site for the project include a group from Dollar General Corporate Headquarters in Goodlettsville, Tennessee. The specialized crew is dispatched year-round and is tasked with stripping the shelves and the displays of products, newly organizing them according to company specifications. Sales figures for the store were not disclosed. Overall sales for Dollar General in fiscal year 2025 was $41.6 billion. Dollar General operates more than 19,000 stores in the United States and Mexico. While some locals welcome the addition of the business, offering a wide range of household goods, food, personal and health care products, more than 5 years ago, others were wary that it would adversely affect the rural community's image and vibe. Carlos Nova, the owner of the Amado Mini Market, had more skin in the game than most, but says there ultimately has been no negative impact on her business, which has prospered during the years since the dollar store opening. Digital message boards on Interstate 19 in Green Valley, Suarita, and Nogales have been installed to alert motorists about crashes, closures, and wrong-way drivers. The message board should be in operation by late March, an Arizona Department of Transportation spokesman has said. The electronic message boards will help ADOT get timely information to the public by displaying information such as road work, crashes, lane restrictions, and closures that might result from crashes at any time, said Garen Groff. Any other pertinent information will be shared with the motorists on the highway. The message board and warning system is part of a $6.2 million intelligent transportation project along I-19. A recently installed fiber optic conduit on 19 will connect the digital message boards to ADOT headquarters in Phoenix, where staff will change messages and alerts as needed. One digital message board has been installed in Green Valley on I-19 northbound, just north of Esperanza Boulevard. Another can be seen at I-19 southbound and south of Pima Mine Road. Signboards were also erected at the Pima Mine Road interchange. Another sign was installed closer to Nogales on I-19 northbound, south of Mariposa Road, and on I-19 southbound, south of Rio Rico Road. The fiber optic conduit installed on I-19 will include wrong-way driver detection and warning systems between Tucson and Nogales. The system will be similar to those on Phoenix area freeways, using thermal cameras to detect wrong-way vehicles, plus alert law enforcement and the public about it. The system will allow state troopers to respond faster and intercept such vehicles. Now, troopers rely on motorists to call 911. The project used federal funding with the goal of helping expand broadband internet in rural Arizona along I-19 and I-17, Groff said. ADOT is also installing high-speed internet fiber along Interstate 40 between Flagstaff and the California line. Walden Grove High School has a new principal, but coming in, she already knew a lot about the school and the Suarita Unified School District. Lisa de la Osa, first set foot in a SUSD school campus as a sixth grader in the 1980s when Suarita Middle School was called Suarita Junior High and was in what is now Suarita Intermediate School. She graduated from Suarita High School in 1993, back when it was in what is now SMS. After graduating from the University of Arizona, she spent a year teaching in the Rio Rico School District. De La Osa then had two children, Matthew and Isabella, took a break, at least from the school system. 14 years ago, she came back to SUSD and spent 6 years as a human resource specialist. Then she spent time teaching social studies and Spanish at Anza Trail School. When Matthew became a Red Wolf, De La Osa became more familiar with the school. I would see things about Walden Grove not only from an employee perspective, but a parent's perspective as well. I'd see things like the year kickoff celebration, the magic, the hype, the excitement, and that great strong culture and morale, De La Osa said. I thought that seems really cool and magical. Around the time Matthew graduated, De La Osa's principal at Anza Trail, Darlene Robinson, began encouraging her to go back to school for a master's degree in educational leadership, saying that she would be a great administrator. Matthew was in college, my daughter was in high school, and I thought, well, they're older, more self-sufficient, right? My husband was working, and his job goes into the evening hours. I thought, you know what, I might as well try it, she said. With her degree in hand by May of 2021, De La Osa nervously began looking for a job in administration. This was all I've ever known, SUSD. In terms of being a student here, then an employee, a mom who sent her kids through here, she said. SUSD has always been the comfort zone for me. I'd been with Anza Trail for 13 years, but I knew that in order to continue the growth in the profession, I had to be willing to take the risk. On the first day of school, in August of 2021, Robinson told De La Osa she had gotten a call from the Nogales School District and they were interested. She's like, I'd be sad to see you go, but again, I totally want you to grow and bloom and blossom. You're going to do great. And I left Anza Trail that same month, De La Osa said. She spent about a year as an assistant principal at Nogales High School, and then looking back, De La Osa said that she now sees an unfortunate accident inside a school auditorium as meant to be. She was proctoring a test when her ankle gave out, sending her to the ground and shattering her tibia and fibula. During a long and painful recovery, the assistant principal job came open at Walden Grove. It led to my goal of coming back home and getting a job here at Walden Grove, which is something that I had always wanted because of that magic that I would see and hear about, she said. Her daughter, Isabella, graduated her first year as an assistant principal, but while she was there, De La Osa said she listened to what she had to say as a student council member. She often makes suggestions on how to make events better for the students. 2 years into her new job, Walden Grove High School Principal Kristen Miller announced that she was moving back home to Missouri. She encouraged De La Osa to apply for the position. During the hiring process, she sat before an oral board made up of another one of Walden's assistant principals, Creston Elkert, WGHS Athletic Director Corey Noble, SHS Principal Stephanie Magnuson, SUSD Assistant Superintendent Scott Downs, WGS Teacher Rita Hardy, a student, and a parent. Being in the spotlight gave her butterflies, but then she calmed down. Talking about my passion and desire to lead and really making an impact on a larger level, that piece of kind of drifts away, and then it's like, okay, I'm talking to people I'm really familiar with, De La Osa said. She just wrapped up her first quarter as principal. De La Osa said she's committed to providing students the best education possible. As for teachers, she always tries to remind them that they are not alone and they are an important part of the overall puzzle. At our monthly staff meetings, there are a lot of activities where we're reflecting on certain aspects of school in general and empowering teachers to be the change in the decision makers and problem-solving groups and teams so that it's not admin telling them what to do, she said. And her hopes for Walden Grove's future? We have a saying, it's always a great deed to be a red wolf, and that motto just stuck with me, and I thought in terms of Walden Grove, what I want to see moving forward is just that continuous improvement, like always striving for continuous improvement and growth, and having everybody on the same page of like, we can always improve, De La Osa said. There's a growth mindset. People want to become better and do better, like never settling. It's 9:45 and you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. Copperview Elementary School special education teacher Tiffany Jasef was named the Arizona Educational Foundation's Arizona Teacher of the Year on Saturday. Jasef has spent 10 years working with special education students, six in the Suarita Unified School District. She was among 625 teachers that were nominated for the honor statewide. Ms. Jasef's selection as 2026 Arizona Teacher of the Year is a tremendous honor. First, it is a special honor for her, and it's a reflection of her professional excellence and tireless dedication to our mission of student success, SUSD Superintendent Manny Valenzuela said via email. Second, it's an honor for our entire community and a reflection of our community's investment in our education programs and its people. Finally, Ms. Jasef is a great ambassador to the entire state and beyond for this noble and important work we do together in education. Jasef will receive $15,000 in cash, a meeting with President Trump, and an honorary doctorate from the Northern Arizona University College of Education. Anza Trail second grade teacher Becky Hill made the top 10 and Suarita High School band instructor Benjamin Garland made the top 15. Jasef started her career teaching 16 years ago in general education, but when she went back to the U of A to earn her master's degree, she decided to get it in special education. And despite the challenges that she readily admits can be emotionally draining, it's a choice she's never regretted. I just fell in love with it. It's more one-on-one, more small group. I can give that individualized attention. I think that's what I really liked a lot, and I do like helping the students who need extra help. They kind of need a voice, and so I like being that for them, she said during an interview with the Green Valley News in September. Jasef has a team of inclusion specialists and aides who help her students spend their days with their classmates and to get them their therapies. She said they are equally deserving of the attention she's receiving. I have a dynamic team. I have a really strong team, and they're just amazing, Jasef said. It's really a team effort to get it done, and it wouldn't be possible without them. Ben Trawick died a few weeks ago. He was 97 years old. That, in and of itself, is a pretty fair achievement. But with Ben, there was more to the story, as Paul Harvey would put it, much, much more. Ben will be forever remembered as the ultimate and prolific chronicler of the Tombstone saga that has captured the imagination of readers and moviegoers for more than a century, much of which can be traced to Trawick's own research. He would grumble over the machinations of Hollywood and some authors that skewed the truth. You see, Ben's mission was to get it right, and he did just that, towering over the Tombstone Hills for more than 40 years, writing, researching, and serving as the town's official historian. I am hard-pressed to think of a writer or film director who didn't seek out Trawick's guidance when starting a Tombstone or a Wyatt Earp project. Ben wrote 36 books, 70 pamphlets, more than 1,200 articles, and 200 interviews that featured his knowledge on the town too tough to die. Ben Trawick was born in Tennessee on August 3rd of 1927. His childhood was a precursor of what lay ahead. He entered the world as a large. He weighed in at 12 pounds. His childhood had dramatic moments. His mother took him to his grandfather's farm when he was 5 years old. The move was necessitated when his grandfather, a large and fearsome man, killed two others and himself. Ben's parents divorced when he was 12, but both remained active in his development. I was a big kid and I loved the outdoors. Both my parents pushed me hard towards education, and I read a lot, Ben reminisced. An old black man, Uncle Tad, was a large influence on Trawick. He would look after Ben when his mother was at work. Tad taught me about life and the wisdom of the woods. He was a former slave who had witnessed the maneuvers of a cavalry led by legendary Confederate Nathan Bedford Forrest, Ben recalled. And Tad told me they was mean and they were big and mean looking. Ironically, Ben's great-grandfather rode with Forrest. Trawick entered the Navy in 1943. He was only 15 years old. Ben smiled and explained, I was big for my age and they weren't particular. While serving on the destroyer, the USS Jenkins, he saw heavy combat in the South Pacific Theater. The ship would be given 15 major battle stars and survive numerous kamikaze attacks. Japanese planes were a constant threat. In one engagement, Trawick got a close-up glimpse of the war's horrors. Manning a gun turret, Ben witnessed the direct hit on the turret nearby. It killed 7 and maimed 15 fellow shipmates. The Jenkins suffered a direct torpedo hit, had to withdraw from the battles and limp home to California on one engine. Ben also found the time to be a fleet boxing champion. Ben married Red Marie, started a family, but the Navy called and he set out to China where he was assigned to a gunboat. In various ports, he became fascinated with the Chinese culture. And years later, that connection led to several visits from Chinese to Tombstone, which led to a cultural swap of histories. Ben and his boat got up in the communist takeover, barely managed to sail out of harm's way when the Mao insurgents were physically yards from them. And back stateside, Trawick tended to his family and sought education. He graduated from Tennessee Tech with a major in chemistry. He was also a starter on the varsity football team. He was hired by the mining giant Asarco, moving up the vocational ladder. He was a contributor to the Oak Ridge project that involved the separation of uranium. He became a manager for Aerojet General and later on United Technologies. His crowning achievement was his work on the Polaris project, spearheading the task of developing solid fuel propellants. The end result was a successful missile launch from a ship in 1961. Always curious, he visited Tombstone in the late 1960s. He was smitten with the old silver camp and its history. He sold his 20-acre California ranch and moved to the iconic Arizona mining town. Ben Hartley recalled, I told Marie I was moving and she was free to come, if you so cared. So Ben, Red Marie, and 3 kids headed out to check off the ultimate bucket list. At the time of Trawick's arrival, Tombstone was no more than a footnote of American history. The limelight had passed by and tourism was at a low ebb. Ben changed that. In a whirlwind of activity, he started his research, which led to writing. He created a popular tourist attraction with his Wild Bunch group that staged reenactments, and he reached out to Hollywood. Tombstone was back in play as a major Western historical stop, and Trawick became an internationally known commodity, sought out by the likes of Sam Elliott, Jack Palance, and John Wayne. In 1997, Red Marie died. She had been a willing participant in the Tombstone adventure, starting her own theatrical group, Hell's Bells. Ben would remarry. His wife, Mary, would serve as a beacon for his work, organizing and typing. Ben was a 19th century man. He wrote it all in longhand and even penning her own works. In a reflective moment, Ben told me, God allowed me 2 beautiful women. I contracted Ben in 1992. The research that originated in childhood, thanks to my grandmother Eula, an Oklahoma orphan, or maybe Nebraska, had become peaked. Our first face-to-face occurred shortly after the move from North Carolina to Arizona in 1993. He was polite and informative in a slightly guarded manner. Our relationship developed over time into a mentor and student agreement. He would test my interest. If a visit wasn't planned to an obscure Tombstone area site, he would give a thereabouts direction and leave me to ferret out the exactness. One blind alley was the location of the Clanton Ranch on the San Pedro. I returned to his office at Red Murray's bookstore, beaming with success. I found it. Describing the area, Ben shifted in his chair and deflated the moment. No, you found the remnants of a mule barn built in 1908. Go back and look again. On one of my early cross-country ERP-related research trips, I planned to investigate Doc Holliday's last years in Colorado. Before leaving, Ben told me to be sure and get to Leadville with no further explanation. After returning, Ben and I discussed the trip. He had asked if I'd gotten to Leadville. Yes, and I had trouble breathing at the altitude. I would imagine Doc did himself harm to go there with his TB. Ben smiled at that, passed the test. Over the ensuing years, our relationship blossomed. At some point, we became colleagues. I helped him with various research points with his ongoing chronicles. I would reciprocate his earlier schooling with annual visits with groups that I had lectured. And we would jointly do a tour of Tombstone highlighted by a last stop at Red Murray's bookstore. This would lead to a lot of book sales for Ben, and he dearly loved that. Ben Trawick brought a lot of joy and entertainment to untold millions of people. Yep, millions, not just the tourist trade in Tombstone and the readers of his thousands of printed efforts. Ben was an international commodity. Brits, Aussies, Germans, Canadians, etc., they all sought him out. His China connection led to videos and documentaries that captivated the immense Chinese audience. And on my wall rests a handwritten letter on lined paper. Ben had sent it to me. The contents are personal and complimentary, and it's a treasured possession. That was written by Scott Dyke, and he is a Wyatt Earp historian, a Western lecturer, and a researcher, and he is a member of the Western Writers of America. And if you'd like to contact him, he can be reached at Scott Dyke, 65, that's ScottDyke65, at gmail.com. And that will take care of the reading of the Green Valley News for this Wednesday. Mark DeGroft with you. Thank you for joining me this morning. Stay tuned for more programming on Sun Sounds, and I will hope to see you on Friday. Till then, take care.